Well, I had been emailed by one of his former Newsweek colleagues, and the colleague sent me a file of the book, and I read it just in one sitting. I couldn't put it down, didn't take a single break. It just, his voice, pops off the page, the funny, subversive Michael that I knew. And it's also just a really crazy story for anyone who's fascinated by the insider worlds of journalism and politics and the reality of covering war.
One of the characters in the book, one of the main characters and the narrator, is called Michael M. Hastings. And Michael, the real Michael, started as an intern at Newsweek, became a war correspondent, and it sort of describes the storylines of the two main characters in the novel. Was it difficult at all for you to separate the characters from your husband?
Not really, because it is very, I feel like it's such a vivid and imaginative story. But it, certainly there were so many of his familiar themes and, the way Michael talked about the decline of print media, the way that Michael captures the insanity of media and war, the duplicity that you see at the magazine. And it just skewers the culture of establishment media elites in a way that is just so Michael and Michael's unique voice. So that was really special for me to happen upon that.
It's a really jaded look at the state of journalism. Was Michael that jaded?
Michael always called himself a cynical idealist because he could be cynical and he could be, he was incredibly hard-hitting. But at the end of the day, he thought that basic compassion was the most important thing for a reporter to have. And so he did, believe that, there was a joy, there's a lot of joy in reporting and that a lot of responsibility came with it.
We're talking a little bit about some of the themes in the novel, but maybe you can tease out a couple of the narrative threads. It begins in 2002, goes into the invasion of Iraq, and ends in the winter of 2005 and early 2006, which was a particularly deadly time in Iraq. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening in the book?
So it starts out in the voice of the young intern, Michael M. Hastings at Newsweek. And, starts out with this ambitious young intern who is trying to please his big editors and is doing anything he can do to please the warring editors, one of whom is Sanders Berman, a kind of waspish Southerner, and the other who is the international editor, Nishant Patel, who is Indian royalty of sorts and well-known intellectuals, both of them. And so it tracks those two editors and what's happening at the headquarters of the magazine with what's actually happening in the field with a war correspondent, A.E. Peoria, who, as you read in the novel, has quite some adventures and some pretty wild stories from his travel abroad. But he quickly, the war correspondent Peoria, becomes jaded because he can't tell the stories that he thinks are the most important stories to tell. And so it's really, the book is just balancing integrity, balancing careerism, and just really captures the insanity of media and war.
Yeah, and there is some insanity to it. It's sort of over-the-top exploits that go on, especially with A.E. Peoria, the reporter who's working abroad. But it's a kind of a fantastical read in that way.
Well, and I think that's what people have always loved so much about Michael's journalism. He was never boring. I don't think that he ever wrote a boring sentence in his life. And all of his stories, he understood, what it took to tell an interesting story. And so it makes it just a really funny read. And while, it does have, some big themes and an important message, I would say that most of all, it's hilarious and really entertaining.
So reviewers have observed that the magazine in this book, the book is called The Last Magazine, that the magazine that's being sort of skewered is Newsweek, and that the two characters who you mentioned who are vying for control of the magazine, Nishant Patel and Sanders Berman, were modeled on Fareed Zakaria and John Meacham. And then Adam Peori wrote a piece for Slate called I Am A.E. Peoria, and he talked about how he knew Michael when Michael was an intern at Newsweek and he was a reporter. Would Michael have appreciated the media circus that's surrounding this novel about media circus inside this journalism world?
Well, and I think the response has been exactly that, which certainly he would have loved all of the buzz. Art imitating life, life imitating art. I do think, though, that the characters are, you know, I want to stress that they're composites, and Michael had an extremely vivid imagination. So I think it undersells him a little bit to say that certain characters are certain people, but definitely, you know, a very vividly rendered telling of what life is like at a news magazine.
So for you, when you read, oh, this is who that is, or this is about that particular story that happened, do you roll your eyes, or do you appreciate that what he's writing about is still sort of happening in real life?
Oh, I love that it's still, that Michael's writing is still at the forefront of conversation. And, you know, something that I've been just so proud of over the past couple of weeks, especially, is how well his journalism has held up, you know, because he was such an accurate, fair reporter and had, you know, just a great vision. The story of Bo Bergdahl, the prisoner of war who recently was released by the Afghan Taliban. Michael wrote an amazing profile of Bergdahl about 2 years ago for Rolling Stone, and he thought that was the biggest story of his career and was certain that there was going to be so much media buzz surrounding it because about America's only prisoner of war. And then it kind of, people read it, thought it was a great piece, but there wasn't much of a media uproar. But that happened, you know, the past month when Bo's release finally was secured and there was the opportunity to politicize the story. And that was something Michael also predicted in the story. So I love that his work has such resonance and such staying power. And I think it's testament to his great talent as a writer.
How much editing was needed for this book before it went into publication?
Not much at all. His editor was actually really impressed by what a final draft he had, and Michael had clearly been working on it for years. He wrote the majority of it when he was in Vermont, actually, and he finished it right before he went to Afghanistan to do this profile of General Stanley McChrystal.
Yes, and that certainly made a name for him, that profile that eventually led to General McChrystal's resignation and some of the revelations that happened because of Michael's reporting. So he had sort of put this novel on the back burner after that?
He had, and the McChrystal story, I feel like the media response to the story was exactly what Michael is writing about in this book. Michael, you know, thought that perhaps the story would make waves for a day or two, but he never thought that President Obama would fire McChrystal. And Michael also thought the most important part of the story was how he depicted counterinsurgency's failure in Afghanistan, not senior staffers for the general who were criticizing the administration. And so that kind of shows, you know, how people and media sees on certain parts of a story and is really what The Last Magazine is all about.
You mentioned that Michael wrote most of the book while living in Vermont. You and he lived in Vermont for a year. What connection did he feel to Vermont?
Michael always considered Vermont his spiritual home, and we were actually planning on buying a house there right after the 4th of July last year. Unfortunately, he passed away before that had a chance to happen. But Vermont was always where he felt a refuge. He felt it was such a peaceful place. He always felt that he did his best writing there. And I think he, you know, he certainly did. He wrote three of his four books while in Vermont. And I just think there's a certain independence that the people of Vermont embody that certainly Michael embodied, but that he really admired and appreciated and wanted to have in his life.
You've made sure that this novel gets published posthumously. When I was reading it, it struck me that this could be an example of a new kind of war literature. You know, the war that's happening far away that most people are only reading about through the media and through the lens of what other people have determined is important. How do you want it to be read?
I certainly appreciate that interpretation, and I think that it's absolutely true. And that's something that comes across in Michael's war reporting. You know, he is most famous for his war reporting. But if you look at how he did it and how he told the story, he always managed to talk about what was happening on the ground in the war zone, but also how the policy was being made in Washington and how bureaucracy affected the lives of millions of people around the world. And so I think, yes, definitely showing the inner workings is a powerful, powerful message of Michael's.
What's it like for you to do interviews like this about your husband's work?
Well, I've been, to be totally honest, I was so nervous about the book and having to, you know, speak publicly about Michael because I hadn't since he passed away. And clearly it's very emotional for me. But it's been, you know, I couldn't be more proud of how everyone has received the novel, of how people are remembering Michael and keeping his memory and his work alive. And I think, it, you know, unfortunately, his life was cut way too short. And, you know, we were, I feel, you know, robbed of him. But he accomplished so much in such a short amount of time. And there are just some people who burn with such passion and have so much natural talent and brilliance. And Michael was certainly one of those individuals who lived his life and made a real impact.
Elise Jordan was the wife of journalist and Vermonter Michael Hastings, who died a year ago. His novel is called The Last Magazine. Elise, thank you so much for talking to us about the work and about your husband, Michael.
No, thanks for listening, and thanks to everyone in Vermont for all the support.